Hey everybody, it's me, W. Kamau Bell. I'm the new interim host of the ACLU's podcast, At Liberty. So subscribe now, listen, we have great conversations. Let's have some joy. I'm super excited about this conversation. Tomorrow is election day. I know everybody out there is tense, and obviously for obvious reasons, tense for different reasons. Anyway, today, the ACLU podcast, At Liberty, I'm going to take it in a little bit of a different direction because we're just going to have some joy. Before we go into the election tomorrow, let's experience some joy. So I brought two of the most joyful people that I know, Padma Lakshmi and Punky Johnson. And also, did you know they're friends? I didn't know they're friends. Apparently they're friends. Today, I'll be speaking with Emmy-nominated producer, television host, food expert, and New York Times bestselling author, as well as one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people. No, I don't check to see if I'm on that list every year when it comes out. Padma Lakshmi. She is the creator of the critically acclaimed and Emmy-nominated Hulu series, Taste the Nation. And Padma served as host and executive producer for 19th season of Bravo's two-time Emmy-winning series, Top Chef. How do they only have two Emmys? She is also the co-founder of the Endometriosis Foundation of America, and just like me, is an ACLU artist ambassador. Her specialty is immigrant rights and women's rights. And in 2023, she also graced the pages of Sports Illustrated magazine's Swimsuit Edition and the Pirelli calendar. But that's not all. I'm also speaking with comedian and writer and New Orleans native, Punky Johnson. I'm a huge fan of Punky, known her for years. You know her best from SNL, which she joined in 2020, which is a weird time to join, as she'll talk about. She's also appeared in season two of HBO Max's Love Life. She's been in Space Force. She's been on a Black Lady sketch show. Punky's out there. She also served as a writer and consultant on Peacock's reboot of Queer as Folk. And Punky can most recently be seen in the movie Bottoms, and she's also touring the country doing stand-up all the time. This is a good conversation. Really, today, I'm just a guest on Punky and Padma's podcast. You'll see. Welcome, Padma Lakshmi. Welcome, Punky. How you doing, everybody? How you doing? Welcome. How's everything?
Everything's great. I mean, I'm very tense.
I think it's a tense time. Everybody's tense. And those who aren't tense aren't paying attention. But I feel like there's a lot of things we can talk about, but let's start with some joy. Let's begin with joy.
I like joy.
So I think I don't know how much the general public knows that you two are like great friends. Like, I just think that that's a thing that I only discovered recently. How did this friendship come about? How did this future buddy cop comedy come about?
I met Punky at a party that Questlove had, and I showed up super late, and the chef there wanted me to try her tacos.
I also showed up super late, and then I got up there and they had no tacos. And I was just being, and Tama caught me in the middle of being a ghetto bitch. I was like, you ain't got no tacos. You ain't got no tacos. And she's like, you want one of my tacos? I'm like, I can't take them. You can't eat Padma tacos. And then it just went from there, just being ghetto.
It's a new friendship. We've been friends, you know, less than 2 years, but almost 2 years. And, you know, Punky travels a lot, and so do I. And until recently, she was so busy at SNL with those crazy hours. But I don't know, I really liked her, and she reminded me of a lot of the people I went to high school with, frankly.
Punky gotta grow up.
No, not at all. It's just something about your attitude or your sense of humor that I really responds to a very deep part of my girlhood. Or, you know, like, it's just, there's an at-home feeling. Punky took me to Mardi Gras at her parents' house. And that felt real familiar too. Like, they were, you know, when I was in her house, it just felt like a house that was down the street from my mom's house. You know, we grew up, you know, she grew up in New Orleans and I grew up in New York and then in Los Angeles for high school. And, you know, we grew up basically in the same socioeconomic upbringing, like working class, middle class people. And so I don't know, but I think what really bonds us is that she's a shitload of fun, you know? And I think
I'll be all over the place.
Because she brings out that side of me, you know, yeah. And I think it makes me more fun. And that's the best thing you can ask for from your friends, is to bring out the best, most joyous, you were talking about joy, a version of you. Mm-hmm. And so,
yes, yes. Keep going. Give me the humanitarian award. Go on ahead. I'm flattered.
And then we've been, you know, we had fun at the Emmys in January.
Oh, we had buku fun up. I forgot all about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she made me eat a 1,000-calorie hamburger after the thing. I'm like, I can't eat that right now.
Yeah, we went to a taco truck or a sopas.
Ooh, the taco truck. Yeah.
The torta truck.
Hands down, best one you ever had. Tell me the truth.
Yeah, it was. It was delicious. And I got to tell you, like, you know, I've been going to these Hollywood parties for a long time. When I first went to the Emmys, my first year I got nominated, it was like The Sopranos were there, Lost was there. So I've been around, you know, those parties for a while. And I don't live in L.A., so it's a chance to see all those people. If I'm going to a party, I'm just going to go to have fun and sure, make some new friends. And if that's also helps business, great. But like, I have a separation between work and fun. I hope that I can make my work fun all the time. But yeah. I don't know. I don't, even my fashion sense goes when I go to LA. So I'm a New York girl. And then when I went on SNL, like, she was happy to see me, but she was mad that she wasn't the one who wrote the scene that got me there.
You know? Oh, yeah, I was pissed because I could have brought it up. I could have seen Brink Pamela.
But you didn't.
I didn't. Ooh. But that's cool. But I made you a burger.
That's true. She has
at SNL?
Yeah, in her dressing room. You gotta see her Instagram videos. She has an air fryer, a hot plate, and a microwave and a blender.
Wow.
And she can do some really complicated dishes in that tiny room. I don't know how NBC doesn't call the fire marshal on her, but it was so sweet. Punky loves food. She loves to cook. She loves Top Chef, which is why she knew who I was at Quest's house or Quest party. And so when I got there, you know, and we couldn't cook, she had taken the trouble to fly in these po' boy patties.
Yeah, as soon as I knew you was coming, I was like, overnight them patties.
So she made me a po' boy at 30 Rock that was so delicious.
Yes.
And had everything on it, hot sauce, all of it, just beautifully dressed.
It was delicious.
It made me feel really welcome. You know, it had always been a dream of mine. I started in theater. I started in improv. Always been a dream of mine to be on SNL. So it was great. Yeah. You know, it was fun. So like in the last 2 years, we've just been at pivotal moments for each other, like just spontaneous fun. It's like, you know, you get a match, and you get dynamite, and then you get us.
So one thing I want to ask you about, because me and you, Padma, started talking. I remember you invited me to be on a comedy show. And at that point, maybe that was when I told you, I don't actually live in New York. People think I do. But then you were hosting these comedy benefit shows. And now I'm understanding, is this true that you are actually entering into the world of stand-up comedy? That you have actually...
I'm so lucky. This is another milestone. I waited all my life for the New Yorker to even know who I was. The first time they put me on their Instagram, it was a beautiful picture, but they named me Priyanka Chopra, so that wasn't fun. I know, you know us Indians, we all look alike.
Lord.
But they, you know, they did this 7,000-word profile on me, so I'm not complaining. But this comedy thing was not ready for prime time. It was just something that I was really interested in because I know I'm friendly and close with a lot of comedians who are...
Yeah.
At the top of their game, very professional and extremely talented. So I would never call myself a stand-up comic. What I'm doing is something else. What I'm doing is like storytelling and monologuing with hopefully a funny bent to it. So I don't say that it rises to the level of stand-up, but I'm certainly a fan of that world. And I think it's the hardest thing to do. And I've watched a lot of my friends over 20 years now. And so we started doing this comedy show to benefit a nonprofit that deals with reproductive choice. And we've done it for 4 years and everybody does it. You know, everybody, Punky did it, Michelle Buteau, Mike Birbiglia, Chris Rock, Hasan Minhaj, Nikki Glaser, Jay Jordan, everybody, Zarna, like whoever you've heard of, they've done it. And so every year I just get up there and I say thank you. We sell out within hours. It's called Padma Puts On a Comedy Show. So very, very literal. but Bo and Yang and Matt, they hosted it the first couple of years. And then this past year, Roy Wood Jr. hosted it for me. And I just come up, say thank you. But this time I was just so curious about it. So I figured it was low stakes because these people aren't really there to see me. They bought the tickets because I publicized it, but they're there to see these wonderful comics. So the stakes were low. So I did a 4.5 minute set.
Yes.
Wow. I love that you know 4.5 minutes. I love that you did exactly. Did you plan to do 4.5 minutes or just end up being 4.5 minutes?
I wanted to do about 5 minutes and okay. I didn't want to overstay my welcome, you know. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I did that. But then we had two shows because we sold out so fast and we had so many comics that wanted to do it. We had enough for two shows. So the second show, I did the same set. But I did it slower and I was working the crowd more. So that was like 6.5, 7 minutes. And it was all about how, you know, in this society, everybody wants to get into your vagina, but no one wants to let you take anything out. So.
Political comedian. All right. No surprise.
I would say a feminist comedian.
Okay. I would classify that as political, but we can have that discussion at another time.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I really loved it. And that I was a warm crowd, so I felt brave mm-hmm. enough to try it, but it was also exhilarating. So then I also did an open mic, and I'll finish my little resume here. I did an open mic on the Upper West Side, and I totally bombed. I will
say. Yay! You're not really doing it until you bomb. You're not really a comedian until you bomb.
That's where you bomb at, though, at the open mic. That's the way you bomb.
Yeah. Well, I did my... I broke my bombing cherry for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would just want to, and I'm sure you've heard this from other comics, most of us get to start, and Punky can weigh in on this, when nobody knows who we are. And so if you bomb, nobody cares. You're just another person who bombed. And the pressure to be, and this is how I've seen a few people who are famous and notable start doing comedy and have to push through the fact that, like, first people are like, yay, Kagma's here. And then about 10 seconds later, it's like, but are you funny? You know?
So that didn't work.
That's a way higher threshold than the rest of us. And Punky, please speak to that. Who just start and people don't really have an investment.
I still bomb too. I don't care about you. I feel like you become a real comedian when you want two things. When you can accept the silence, because I'll be quiet for 5 minutes while I'm thinking. I don't care. And then I'll take a bomb. Because I'm like, all right, mm-hmm. that ain't work. Because I write from the stage. So if it ain't funny, it ain't funny. I'll go figure it out. I'll fix it later.
I am a student of the form, a humble student of the form. And it's, as I said, it's a hobby at best. You know, it's more like a fan trying to mimic what they appreciate in other artists.
It's just the three of us. We're not on a podcast anymore. We're just having a phone call. Do you have visions of like, if I keep doing this, I will then one day do the Padma hour. Okay, good.
Yeah,
okay, good.
Because at the core of whatever I do, I mean, it's certainly been based in food, or that's the voice that people are used to be speaking through, right? Used to me, the language of food is what people are used to me speaking. But yeah, I want to do an hour. I'm still, no matter what, I'm a storyteller. So whether mm-hmm. it's Taste the Nation.
That's what I was about to say. I feel like you could do like a really good one-woman show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You could just add a whole bunch of just like elements of like your entire world into it instead of just like stand-up.
Yeah. And I think like I'm a writer first. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you read my memoir, you know, it's some of it's heavy because my life has been heavy. But a lot of it also is just funny. It's just weird. It's like a series of Curb Your Enthusiasm moments. And you're just like, did that happen? Okay, that happened. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, so yes. But that probably will be, you know, in 10 years or something. I just wanted to, when I left Top Chef, I promised myself that I spent 17 years doing what I had to do to keep the lights on and further mm-hmm. my business. So now I'm going to take a little bit of time to do what I want to do.
That's what I'm doing.
Exactly. I think you had a version of that with SNL.
I'm taking a whole bunch of time. I'm like, they like, Punky, you have to get on the internet. People are going to think you died. I'm like, let them. I'm not getting back online until next year. My social media manager is going crazy. Content. We need content. I don't want nobody to know what I'm doing. I'm moving in silence, babe. You got to move in silence, man. I'm getting right, spending time with family, making up a lot of time with my nephews. I'm good. I'm chilling.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. So when we first met Punky, it was at UC Berkeley. It was a gig, a comedy gig. It was you, me, Roy Wood Jr. And that was the first time I met you. And I remember being very impressed and you were very funny and we had a good time. And I was like, man, that comic's great. Good luck to her and whatever happens. And then like 2 weeks later, oh, she's on SNL. Like, you know, like, so do you remember, did you know SNL was coming at that point? Or did that gig? Yeah, okay.
I thought I was just going to be ghetto for the rest of my life. I didn't know I was like, if I get on TV, it's going to be on like Stars or Showtime. It ain't going to be, network television. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then shit, boy, COVID hit. And it was like, you want to audition? I was like, audition for SNL? Me?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah. I was like, all right. And I did like 6 characters. Then they liked that stupid shit. And then I was like, nigga, like you can send the same or you can do the different tape. I did a whole different tape. Put 12 characters on that thing. And then it just went from there.
Now, we've heard a lot about these SNL auditions. Were these characters you had in the tuck or were these characters you came up with for the audition?
Smoking weed and drinking, man. one of the characters was called, I was making up character name. One of the characters was called This How Black People Break Up. That was the character name.
How do black people break up?
They be like, get out. And then when you get out, they be like, so you really gonna leave? It's like, you're not supposed to leave. You're not supposed to leave when she tell you to go. You're supposed to stay.
No, baby, yes, I don't want to leave.
But that's a hard lesson I learned messing around with women. Because I was raised around a pack of men. You know, my brain is on that. So I learned that when your lady tell you to leave, you're supposed to fight to stay and not walk out the door. If you leave when she tell you to leave, you're going to get more trouble than you was before. So you got to be like, nah, I ain't going nowhere with the stupid shit.
Unless you want to leave. And then you're like, thanks for the opportunity. Bye.
Oh, no, I always be leaving, but then I get confused. I be like, look, just tell me what you, I don't be feel like being tested. Just tell me what you really want. Because I'm going to do what you say, dude.
So you're saying you never imagined being on SNL. You were like, I was a little kid who like saw Eddie Murphy on SNL. I was like, one day I'm going to be in SNL. And now two of the three of us on this have been on SNL. And I'm not one of those three, one of the two. So did you know what SNL, like the lore about SNL, all the late night writing sessions and all those things? Was that a thing you were prepared for when you got there?
No.
Okay.
Hell no. Absolutely I wasn't prepared about for none of that.
Nothing.
I mean, but to do it. But I went in at a bad year. I went for COVID. Remember it was COVID?
I
couldn't get to know nobody. I was in New York. I ain't had no friends. They, you know, every time we tried to talk to each other, these people in these purple vests, hey, back up. We couldn't, like the tables weren't together. Everything was just so separate. Our rooms was on the other side. It was a mess. It was insane.
Wow.
But it was cool.
And I know before we jumped on, you said something about you don't think of yourself as a political comedian. Is that correct?
I don't get into politics because it just people, it's not like you could take politics and argue about it like it's football or sport and then be cool afterward. Mm-hmm. Like politics is becoming like super moral and shit. Like, so it's like, if you follow one, you know, if you follow these people, that can mess up your personal relationship with them. So I don't even like to get into it with a lot of my friends. So I just kind of like to just keep it quiet. Now, if I do talk about politics on stage, you know, I'm gonna light it up. Just don't, you know, I find it so hilarious when a ghetto bitch talk about politics. Cause the whole angle and take on it is so different from everybody who know about politics that it's just stupid and hilarious.
But I would just say that when I thought, when you got on SNL, just the nature of the way SNL has been over the course of its history, you become a political comedian just because your identity is political. And all the headlines are like, first openly gay black woman on SNL. There may have been gay black women on SNL before, but they weren't openly gay, you know. So
yeah.
And so you So how did it feel to suddenly become like a political figure in that way? You know, something that where they were writing about, you know.
It wasn't like a feeling or whatever. It's just like you could just see how everything just shifts. Because in my mind, I'm just chilling and minding my business. And then, of course, I got a corporate job now, the first one I've ever had in my life. So I can't respond to all the foolishness. You know what I'm saying? But see, once I left SNL and people would start telling me stuff, I've been having a ball. My social media manager send me, I'd be like, send me everything. I'm being petty. My social media manager starts sending me stuff and I'll start responding. And then people start deleting their comments because I'm like, I ain't got to be quiet no more. I ain't got no job to lose. Ho, what's happening? And not nobody don't want to say nothing.
I think that's so great because it's true. And I'm sure Ben Palmer knows this too, that I don't think your average person thinks of SNL as a corporate job, but it's absolutely. Talk more about that. It's not a, you think of it like, oh, you're a comedian. You get on there and get to have a good time. But it is a, you fill out paperwork. You have to talk about your 401k and there are supervisors.
And now this was just a job where you just had to keep a lot of that under control.
And also that there was that because you're, you know, basically SNL is huge. It's been around forever. Everybody knows what it is. That you're sort of also stepping into a thing that, you know, that you can't really necessarily change as much as you, like, what were your expectations going in and how did that change when you got in there, especially because of COVID? It was very different.
Zero expectations, just like relationships. You have expectations and then they're not fulfilled and then you be pissed off. So I ain't had no expectations.
And am I right? You chose not to go back? Is that correct? I mean, I don't want to get into all your business, but.
Well, I got, you have a quit and get fired at the same time. I think it was like the judgment day and I was like, I gotta talk to y'all. They was like, we gotta talk to you.
Oh, I need to talk to you. And that was the moment that you can't fire me. You can't fire me, I quit. No, but I will say this because as somebody who was just watching it from the outside, you know, and again, I have read enough about the history of SNL to know that it is, you know, first of all, it's hard on straight, decently handsome cisgender white guys. Like it's hard on like, and it's made for those guys. It's made for like college educated, somewhat decent, not great looking, decently looking white guys. Yeah. And anything you step outside of that, it becomes hard for it. So if you're a white woman, it becomes hard. If you're a black woman, it becomes harder. You know, Bowen has a legendary story of how hard it was, you know, what he had to go through because of how he got hired and Shane Gillis. So it becomes harder. And so knowing that, oh, it's an openly gay black woman, super funny, I would watch you and I think, oh, she's doing great. She's doing, you know, she's in sketches. She's getting laughs.
I was so stressed. I had, no. Wow. No, I was stressed. Mm-hmm. I was fat. I gained 30 pounds. Like, I'm healthy right now. I'm good. My skin is clear. I'm glowing. Can't you see? Do you see this, Joy? Yes, I do.
So it is clear that you do not feel regretful about leaving SNL.
No. I got a lot going on. I'm busier than I've ever been right now.
Nice.
Like I'm very, very busy. I'm up early in the morning. So I sleep. I'm very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
But in this business, you'll be busy without making money. See, you got to do the shit first.
Yeah, no, for sure. No.
You know what I'm saying?
The busier I am, the less money I'm making. Yeah, the more Zoom meetings I'm in, the less money I'm making. I'm Zoom meetings all day. Oh, no. Well, it's so interesting to me that you two, first of all, and we don't have to get into the whole thing, but right now, I don't know if you know, and we'll just keep it general, this country is having a conversation about the South Asian community and the black community coming together and how to navigate that. So it's interesting that you two are a living example of that, of people who are ostensibly from completely different worlds, races, parts of the country who are navigating, who have connected in a beautiful friendship. And on top of that, you have both recently, not that long ago, left sort of giant television franchises and are out here excitedly figuring out the next chapter of your life. So it's funny to think that like from the outside, you seem quite different, but from the inside, it's very similar. Is that part of what bonds you two together?
I never thought about it that way, but maybe. I mean, I just felt a great sense of freedom and like I got my life back and my health back too. You know, it's not that I might not do another show like that, you know, but it's just, I needed to get off the wheel and, you know, I had done Top Chef so long that I just wasn't being challenged anymore. There were many reasons I left. You know, when I was young, I had all the time in the world. Now, you know, to me, time is more valuable than money. And so it's like, how, you know, I'm 54 years old. How do I want to spend the next 25 years of my life, which is really the rest of my active life, let's say. I did too much harm to my body when I was young to live past that, I know. But I'd be 80, 79, you know, so I'm good. But I just do think that there are more things that, you know, I can't know what it's like to walk in your shoes, but I do know that there's more similarities of experience because we're both othered in different ways, of course, you know. But it's why, I mean, it's why I started working with the ACLU in 2016 on immigrant rights. I had done stuff in reproductive rights, but, you know, it was really as a reaction to that. And I bring my identity to it. You know, I try not to. I try to hold myself to a measure that is not dependent on my identity and more dependent on my accomplishments. But my accomplishments are tied to my identity as well, obviously. So it's hard to parse that out. And so I feel things very deeply from the place I stand, you know, I'm looking through, I'm looking out through my eyes and they in my brown head.
My brown head. I was going to ask you about your work with the ACLU, but you're a pro, so you know how to segue into that perfectly.
Thank you.
So as this comes out, it'll be right before this nation votes. Can we just talk a little bit about what this moment feels like, what it means to you, just generally about like just what it feels like in this moment? Because everybody's talking about it. You know, I feel, and Padma, I don't know if you're in the same position I am, where people think I have secret knowledge just because of the work I do. Like, tell me what's going to happen. Just tell me what's going to happen. Yeah. So,
or tell them X, Y, and Z. I'm like, I don't have them on speed dial.
Oh, tell them. Yeah. Tell them. Yeah. You need to tell the people in charge. Oh, yeah, of course. Because I'm at that meeting every Friday. The people in charge meeting.
If you think I have that, do you think if I have that power, I would still be where I am? But no.
Or then I wouldn't have already told them the thing you want me to tell them.
I mean, it's obviously, look, leaving aside, you know, politics or any party or any
candidates or referendums
I'm not here to comment on that, especially as an ACLU, you know, artist ambassador, but I will tell you that what is on the line tomorrow is a lot of our civil rights, you know, and that is all I'm interested in. And that's why I wanted to work with the ACLU. I like that they are nonpartisan. That was important to me. And for years, I didn't even register for one party or the other. You know, I am now, but I never did. And I still believe that I'm going to vote for who I think is going to preserve my and my fellow loved ones' circle. Their human rights, their constitutional rights, you know, all of that. It's easy to protect your rights when you have access in this country and resources. And when you look a certain way and are born into a certain upbringing or family. But for the rest of us, it is not a guarantee at all. I just want to make things as equal and more fair as they can be. And part of that is really doing everything I can to get the vote out, in the sense that just reminding people to exercise that constitutional right, that you need to vote, you know, across both parties, all parties, independent, everything. I share a lot of the frustrations that everyone has about politics in this country, about what you have to do to be a politician in this country. And I'm empathetic to them. I think there are many of them who are decent people, who really are dedicated public servants who want to do well, but also get sucked into the system, which thwarts that goodwill at every juncture. So that's what I'm interested in. And that's why I tell people, you have to vote. You can't not vote. You have to vote. Vote for who you want. Vote your conscience. You know, just go online before you go in there. Look up the whatever laws you're voting on or propositions in your state, in your county. It's not just important to vote in national, federal politics, but it's just, you just want to have a hand in your life and in the people making that decision, whether it's going to really come out the way you want it or not. You can at least say, well, I tried, I voted. Right.
What about that? What do you think, Punky?
I think a lot, okay? Speaking for somebody who don't really get, you know, I don't like to get into politics because I don't really understand it, because they always using all these big words. And then I had to fall back and think about it. I think it's meant to confuse you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. if this was 20 years ago, like 20, I'm going to just point blank tell you the truth. 20 years ago, I was voting for whoever I thought was the coolest.
Yeah. We all went through that. It had nothing to do with policy
and what they wanted to change and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But it's just like now I'm starting to get into policy. I have like a political text thread with friends. So when something happens, if they send a text or if I send them something that I found, since I don't really get it all the way, in my dyslexia, it takes control 100% sometimes. I'll be like, look, can y'all break all this down for me? In punky language, and they'll break it down. Yeah. And that's when I start understanding. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think more people are like you than you realize, and more people don't realize most people are like them, where they don't get they don't know all the ins and outs. They don't know all the big words. But the thing you have done, which is so great, is you found a crew of people who can help you, who are smart in those issues, who can help you understand it. And I think that's what more people like you should do, is find a crew of people, get a political group chat, but just for the people.
Explain it to me, because they be talking, like, at the end of the day, it's meant to confuse you.
Yeah. I just want to say thank you to both of you for allowing me to be a guest on your podcast. I love hanging out with the two of you. I hope to see you both again sometime. It's been a complete honor. And I think it's important, especially as we go into the next chapter of America, that we experience some joy with the two of you. You brought a lot of joy today, which will help. Maybe people can listen to this as they wait in those lines to exercise their civil rights.
Anytime, Kamau. I've been a fan of yours for a long time.
Ah, sure. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you,
Pam. And piggybacking off of Padma. I'm piggybacking off of that.
Well, and I was so happy to have both of you here and happy to find out. Come on. There's something you two have to be working on a sitcom. There's got to be something here. This is too good. This is too good.
You know,
but anyway.
Well, but now we should.
Now, thank you, Kamau. We will.
Thank you.
We give you an EP credit if that happens.
Sweet. That's all I want is EP credits. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of At Liberty, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast and rate and review the show, and just give it 5 stars. Don't be weird. We really appreciate the feedback. Until next week, I'm W. Kamau Bell. At Liberty is a production of the ACLU. This episode was produced by the ACLU's Jessica Herman-Weitz, Gwen Schroeder, and Cindy Tsai. And also, Who Knows Best Productions, me, Kelly Rafferty, and Melissa Hudson-Bell. This show is edited by the folks at Ultraviolet Audio. And remember, friends don't let friends not vote.